Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Red Sox on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Grill at the Game, and today's episode is part two of my conversation with my pal Javi, host of Locked On Padres. Today was Alex Cora's press conference, and I'll be recapping that for you tomorrow, but I wanted to make sure you guys got a chance to hear the second part of this conversation before I recapped the Cora presser, because this part of the conversation is about Cora. So without further ado, here's Javi.
Like we've been alluding to with like this new ownership, new people in charge. That's the other thing. This is all right. We talked about COVID and all that, and this is the new news about the Dodgers not suspending them or baseball not suspending them. But now the latest thing is your team and the White Sox and the Tigers. And I know on my podcast, I already talked to people about the AJ Hinch thing and Tony La Russa, but I think that you could kind of group together AJ Hinch and Alex Cora together because of their involvement with the Houston Astros type of scandal and whatnot. First of all, just tell me, what was your initial reaction to them bringing Alex Cora back, your beloved Boston Red Sox?
Oh, God. Oof. It's really hard to call them my beloved Boston Red Sox right now. but it's funny because, like, I love the Red Sox. I do not love this iteration of the Red Sox. Like, it's, you know, I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan, but, like, this specific version of you, we have some issues. So here's the thing. With Cora, I am still conflicted. Like, I was not one of those people on Friday, like, crying tears of happiness. I was also not one of those people who was like, screw him, he's terrible, he's a monster. Like, I'm a person who believes that to an extent, people deserve second chances. I think that being part of a cheating scheme, especially one that was investigated in such a poor manner and the results were so lopsided in terms of who actually got punished, I think that you should get a second chance. You know, the investigation was like a total disaster. I mean, like, I hate to make this again, like the Rob Manfred show. Like, this is the Hoosiers. this is like Rob Manfred is like our version of
Hoosiers. Yeah,
from that's our true. Bracket. Yeah. But here's the thing. Rob Manfred said in 2017 that his plan going forward in terms of sign stealing investigations was the field manager and the general manager of a team found guilty would be the ones who would take the brunt of the blame. Like, they would be the ones who were punished. They would be the ones who everything fell on, because they're the ones who are supposed to be in charge of their players, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. But when your players are the ones devising a complicated and yet caveman-esque system of banging on trash cans and moving TV monitors around, and it's them who come up with it, I feel like you kind of have to, you know, it's one thing for your manager, like John Farrell, for example, with the Apple Watches in Boston in 2017. Mm-hmm. It's one thing for you to say, okay, well, I'm not going to punish players because their coaches came up with it and the players just benefited from it doing what their coaches told them to do. It's another thing when your players are the ones coming up with the plan and then getting everyone to go along with it, including your bench coach, Alex Cora. Like, the exact quote in the investigation was, it was a player-driven scheme. So how are you not going to punish a single player for it? And the thing is, players were pretty confident, based on the past precedent, that they weren't going to get punished because, A, they were granted immunity in exchange for their testimony, and B, because they had seen Manfred declare that he only planned on punishing field managers and general managers in situations such as this. So you have players who are like, okay, so who is no longer in our organization who we can put all the blame on because he's not here anymore? Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora, right?
Yeah, scapegoated.
And you see that because those two people got punished and no Astros players got punished. Lunau and Hinch got fired. Well, they got suspended and then they got fired. And that was kind of it. Like, the $2+ million fine that the Astros had to pay as a fine for cheating is less than they paid Roberto Ozuna, their wife beater who pitches for them, you know, and then they lost like two draft picks. Okay, whatever. I'm not really concerned with them. Like, they got off pretty scot-free in my book. Same thing with the Red Sox, though, of course, they didn't have a player-driven scheme. So to me, you know, this whole thing is just kind of a mess of like, well, Manfred did not do a good job investigating the Astros. Mm-hmm. Then he didn't do a good job of punishing the Astros. Then he did a super thorough job investigating the Red Sox. Like, the investigation was at least a month longer than the Astros investigation. They interviewed everybody multiple times, and then they didn't even find anything except for like one guy, supposedly. I don't know how much I believe of that, but the point being, the Red Sox were very insistent that when they mutually agreed to part ways, was the wording that they used, when they mutually agreed to part ways with Cora, they said it was strictly because of his involvement in the Houston scandal. And my question to you, and this isn't me trying to like, you know, promote conspiracy theories. You know me, and people who listen to this podcast know, like, I'm the first person to call out the Red Sox when I don't like what they're doing. I'm a homer, but I'm also objective. Don't you think, based on the fact that I don't think I can remember Rob Manfred ever having a win in his entire career as commissioner, like literally, has he ever had a real win? I don't think so. Don't you think that if he had some kind of huge smoking gun against Cora and the Red Sox that would have made him look like a competent and powerful commissioner, that he would have shouted it from the rooftops?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
He had something where he was like, I have proof. The Red Sox have been cheating for 100 years. We're taking their ballpark. They're banned for life. They're the new Black Sox 100 years later. Like, he literally came out and said, like, we didn't find anything. We found this one dude, and that was it. And like, I really don't think, based on like everything else that he did last winter to expose these teams, and the fact that it was the Red Sox second infraction because of the Apple Watches, even though that was a different manager and different coaching staff, like this was their second infraction.
I forgot and about the Apple Watches.
Still, well, you know, whatever. 2017 was a weird year, but yeah, like, I mean, just think about that. Like, genuinely, I'm asking you, don't you think that there would have been like serious, like Thor hammer dropping levels of, I'm Rob Manfred, I own you now.
I am Rob Manfred, and I am the commissioner. No, I just watched the American President the other day. He would have been up there like, he would. Oh wow, look at, man, it's so absurd how low key our tastes in certain things are the exact same.
We watched it on election night. I was like,
that makes sense. Stuff.
Anyway, yeah, so.
No problem. It's like, I agree. It would have been on their, like, bait in The Dark Knight Rises, just reading Commissioner Gordon's letter, like, you know, freeing the truth and all that. But it's not – it feels like just baseball is at this level where it's very – the way they take things are just – it's so transparently arbitrary, the way they just go about suspensions and how they approach different. There's not really like a core plan. There's not like a set of rules per se that it feels like, you know how many games you're getting suspended, which is allowed, which is not allowed. And they're obviously hell-bent on certain things like the minor leagues and all that stuff, which isn't great. But, and like you said, I don't want to make this too much of a Rob Manfred hate show. I feel like we've been talking about that already too much, but it was very, there was just a feeling of wow. And it's like, baseball doesn't even wait. It was just like, AJ Hinch, you're back. Alex Cora, you're back too. All right, everybody, move on. It's like very, there's something, the expediency of it, the rush to it, almost like there's not even a care. Almost like, let's just sneak this in. Maybe people won't be paying attention because it's election week and because the Dodgers won the World Series.
Red Sox snuck it in.
Yeah, and we even mentioned the whole Gold Glove announcements getting announced on election night. It's like, what are you doing? Why then? Just that on top of
exactly
that.
Exactly why. That's exactly why.
It's a very confusing set of affairs, I think, right now for Major League Baseball to kind of be in. And I don't really know what their thinking is totally. I guess like it was take out the trash day type of thing. Like they just wanted to sneak everything in there. I don't know if they thought like everybody was definitely not going to notice. I feel like people have talked about it a lot and they're talking about the managers and stuff. I mean, the La Russa news. I mean, we could spend it forever on that, which I won't now just because I already talked with her about that.
I feel like that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. I already spoke to her about that, but I think it's just, what was I going to say? Hold on. I'm forgetting right now. Come back to me.
While you think about it, let me just say, with the manager thing, with Hinch and Cora getting hired immediately after the suspensions, for starters, I mean, I would say, on the one hand, it's surprising because there are a lot of strong managerial candidates around the league who haven't gotten hired. Like all of Bochy's proteges, for example, it's like, well, why aren't people looking at them? or why aren't people hiring them? They might be looking at them, but why aren't they getting the job? It was interesting to me that Hinch and Cora got hired so quickly. I mean, even the Red Sox interviewed, I did a whole episode where I talked about different people that the Red Sox were hiring, where I was like, these guys are great. I'd be cool with almost any of them. It's not that there aren't other options. And that's, I understand why people are like, well, these guys both came back from a year suspension and they got hired immediately. And it's like, okay, well, I even tweeted this. I said something to the effect of, if you think that they should have gotten lifelong bans and that's why you're mad that they got hired so quickly, like, I don't know what to say to you. But if you acknowledge that they served their suspension and now they're allowed back in the game of baseball, teams are allowed to hire them. Should they hire them? I don't know. But are they allowed to? Like, that's the whole point. Like, they served their time, as they say, and now they get to re-enter the game. And you can talk all you want. Like, we can talk all we want about whether Manfred punished them harshly enough, whether they should have been allowed back in the game in the first place. But the point is, that wasn't up to them. You know, they served the suspension they were handed, and here they are. And, like, I don't really know what to say to people who are like, well, you can hire someone who's not suspended. It's not up to me. You know, all we're doing is talking about this, but to say to them, okay, so you served your suspension, but also no one should ever hire you again. Like, I don't know what to say to people like that, because that's not how this works, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those things. And it's like, it's almost like baseball. I finally forgot my minor point I wanted to bring up, which was just like, it's almost like baseball thought we were all just going to have the baseball discourse on Blake Snell at analytics all week. And that everybody just wasn't going to be talking about this. Like, the Blake Snell thing is still a conversation, I think, and I don't know. I talked about it on my podcast a little bit about this analytics, data-driven baseball and all this stuff, and I think it's fairly conclusive that you got to just approach regular season and postseason differently, and it was just kind of silly. But it's true. I think though, all of these things combine to create a sport, a product, a league that is very – it's like steps on itself every time, you know, every time it's starting to be exciting. You get your Tatis and you get your bets and you get your, just the actual games being very exciting this year and all that. Some cool storylines. Then it's like, hey, let's hire the 76-year-old manager who's, you know, super against guys just being who they are, Tony La Russa. And then we're just going to hire these two guys that were suspended and kind of, I guess, pretend everything didn't happen and we're not, you know, suspending the Astros at all. And then Justin Turner, it all creates this weird kind of environment, I think, in baseball. And that's just kind of, we kind of, I guess, just have to get used to it. What do you think now? I know this is a hard pivot, but like, what do you think this says about just the Red Sox from a baseball perspective? Just like a, you know, where their team direction is going in terms of them hiring Alex Cora. What do you think, like, do you think that that means they're going to go all in more next year, or, which is what I imagine your opinion is going to be, which is just them just bringing him back and kind of just being a little bit of a, not totally, totally incompetent, you know, organization, because they did win the World Series not too long ago. But just like from that perspective, what do you think they're kind of aiming for with this move from a baseball perspective?
You know, it's interesting because I was on a private Zoom call Q&A that Chaim Bloom did. One of the rabbis from one of the prominent Boston synagogues was asking Bloom questions, and it was like not a media event. It was like literally for like Jewish synagogue goers. It was awesome because he was, got to see a different side of him because he was super relaxed. He wasn't really like Chaim Bloom, chief baseball officer. He was like Chaim Bloom, like young Jewish dad who loves baseball. So you got like a different side of him. He was super loose and like opened up and kind of was talking about what he wants from his relationship with a field manager. And he kept saying, you know, there has to be a lot of trust. I want like a real working relationship, like close, you know, very cooperative and like collaborative. Like he really wanted like a collaborative effort, which I don't think you often get in baseball. I feel like a lot of times, or at least in the past, you know, your GM would kind of be like, all right, here's your new player. I paid like $6 million for him. And also we're trading your first baseman, make it work, you know? And then he just kind of like goes back into his office, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's clearly not what Chaim Bloom wants. And so it was interesting because the Red Sox kept saying, you know, this is 100% Chaim Bloom's decision, which like we all know is crap. It was never going to be 100% his decision. Like that's hilarious. But I keep seeing reports that Bloom had to be convinced that it was Cora. And it's interesting when you think about the word convinced, because is it Bloom had to be convinced by Cora? Did Bloom have to be convinced by the ownership? Well, they're in charge of him, so they could have just been like, you're hiring Cora. Or did Bloom have to be convinced for himself in terms of like, I need to know that I can trust this guy after he was in two different investigations last year. I don't know. I think it's interesting because Cora's main competition as of, you know, 4 days ago, 3 days ago, was Sam Fold, who is somebody that Bloom had worked with in the past. So I'm not really sure how it shook out. I loved Alex Cora before most Red Sox fans did. I was like,
yeah,
you felt very betrayed when everything went down. You know, between 2003 and 2017, you had Grady Little, Terry Francona, Bobby Valentine, John Farrell, and then Cora came in winter 2017. And Cora was supposed to be the guy. Yeah. Cora was supposed to be the guy who, didn't we all? He was supposed to be the guy who kind of broke the trend of the Red Sox going through, you know, managers the way we go through paper towel rolls in the kitchen. You know, he was supposed to be the guy that was here for a long time, like your Casey Stengel or your
Bruce Bochy.
Yeah, Bruce Bochy. And then he, like, all this went down and it just felt like, you know, we finally had like a competent guy who was good with his players, like, you know, for the first time since Tito, and like it hurt, you know, because fans don't sign up to, you know, you sign up to have your heart broken. You have to be a little bit of a masochist to be a sports fan. But, you know, baseball fans don't sign up for cheating and wife beating and performance enhancing drugs and investigations. Like, this kind of stuff shouldn't be happening. And I think it comes back to leadership. You touched on this when you talked about Blake Snell, and we talked about, you know, all this, all the other stuff like Tatis. You know, every time something good happens in baseball that could be good for baseball from like a fan standpoint and a player standpoint, something has to come along to ruin it. Mm-hmm. Like Tatis, one of the best players in baseball right now, and he's so young. And then, of course, it devolves quickly into the should he have swung on 3-0 debate. And it's like, why do we have to have this debate? Why are we doing this? Why are you... It's like baseball is run by Debbie Downer, you know, at every possible turn. Oh, I'm getting married. Well, good luck paying for the wedding. Wah, wah. Every single time.
Oh, God. No. I think, wow, I'm really slow right now. I just keep forgetting everything I'm going to say.
Me too. Yeah, it's okay. I didn't have any coffee today.
Yeah, it's okay. With Cora, it was also, you know, I liked him too because, you know, he's Puerto Rican. So I root for every Puerto Rican, except for Carlos Correa. He's currently... We don't claim him at the moment. I think his time is, you know, I talked with the Alliance. We've been having meetings and all that. And we're like, look, you know, he's probably not in the S tier anymore with Manuel and all them. But I think that, you know, he's coming back. He's coming back. Cause at least he kind of had like an FU edge to him almost that he like, I'm not saying I respected it, but I kind of did a little bit. Just kind of be like the only one that was like embracing that. Yeah, we're the villains. All right, we're going to stop pretending all that. I don't know, but whatever. I'm totally wrong on that part. Totally not correct thing for me to say. But Alex Cora is one of those people too, because he took like a, back when there was the whole issue and the hurricane in Puerto Rico, like he visited there and the Red Sox let him take a plane there. So I was definitely rooting for him. So it was one of those things. As much as I love when things don't go the Boston way, I was really sad because I'm like, couldn't it have been like, John Farrell that this happened to? Could it have been like a manager I'm indifferent to and don't really care about? No, instead it was Alex Cora. I'm like, oh no, it's actually a manager. And the Red Sox fans liked him too. So I was like, oh, this is really unfortunate. It's every time, I mean, almost every time we have like something cool that's developing in baseball. It catches you at the end, like DK Metcalf, you know, dragging down that guy. I know you don't watch football from last week against the Cardinals, you know, when it looks like it's a clear touchdown and all that.
No,
it was such a viral.
There's a lot of football in our house on Sundays, like literally right now we've got football. I just also do other things while the football's going on.
Yeah, I got you. But that's what it feels like a lot of times with baseball. It's very, it's hard to find something totally purely great, which is, in fairness, that's how the whole world works. It is hard to find something that is purely great. And some would argue it doesn't even exist. But I do think that this is a very interesting kind of hire for the Red Sox.
I hope you guys enjoyed part two of my chat with Javi. We're going to be doing a lot of off-season content for you guys throughout the winter to help you get through all of these long days without baseball. Tomorrow, I will be recapping the Cora press conference, and then Thursday will be the final part of this conversation with Javi. I'm going to break it up a little bit just so I can talk about what went down in the Cora presser today, It was very interesting. A lot to handle from a mental standpoint as someone who's still trying to figure out how she feels about Cora being back with the Red Sox. Thanks so much for tuning in today. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at GFSTARR1. You can follow Locked On Red Sox at LO_Red Sox. And before I end today, I just want to take a minute to wish my dad a happy birthday. It's his birthday today, November 10th. And he's the guy that made me fall in love with baseball. He's the guy that told me baseball bedtime stories every night, taught me how to play Strat-O-Matic, taught me how to pitch, taught me how to catch pop flies, came to all my softball games, took me to Fenway Park all the time. And he's the reason that I love baseball and the reason that I founded Girl at the Game and the reason that I host this podcast, everything baseball that I am, and a lot of other things I owe to my dad. So happy birthday, Dad. And to everyone else who's not my dad, wear a mask, and as always, go Red Sox.